Welcome to a burning fire, Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Most who will hear these words will be people who profess to be religious, who have an interest in Christ and the church. But did you ever attend a worship period and come away thinking, I did not get much spiritual help from the worship today? Did you ever have the experience of being present and leaving with the feeling that it all meant very little to you? Have you ever sung the songs and prayed and studied, even eaten the Lord's Supper, given of your money, only to feel that you really had received very little, almost nothing from it all? If ever that has been the case with you, and many have openly expressed they have felt this way, our study will be of real importance to you. I think it can be a real benefit in the days that may still be a part of your life. We must admit that sometimes the songs, the sermon, they are more meaningful to us than at other times. The lesson the preacher preached may have been more applicable to us at one service than at another time. The wording of the prayers may have been more moving and expressive of our sentiments than at other prayers. We must realize, however, that the worship services are conducted by mere men, not angels or some heavenly host. Therefore, we must make some allowance for imperfections and inadequacies in the people who lead us in our collective worship. But let us turn to our text and pursue the matter further, for we shall learn other things that we need to know. And our text is Luke 18, verses 9 through 14. And he spake this parable unto certain which trusted in themselves, that they were righteous and despised others. Two men went up into the temple to pray, the one a Pharisee, the other a publican. The Pharisee stood and prayed this with himself, God, I thank thee that I'm not as other men are, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this publican. I fast twice in the week, I give tithes of all that I possess. And the publican, standing afar off, would not lift up so much as his eyes unto heaven, but smote upon his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For every one that exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted. Now our plan of study shall be in three phases. One, let us look closely at the two men involved. And then let us listen to them pray and analyze their prayers. And three, we want to take note of the attitude and the evaluation their prayers had by Jesus, and we will see the result of them. Now, generally speaking, we can see that Jesus was rebuking one kind of behavior while placing his approval on another kind. It provides us with an answer as to why our worship periods may not be more meaningful to us. First, consider the two men involved, a Pharisee and a publican. Pharisees usually appear in the Bible as people we do not like. They possess certain qualities that are repulsive to most people. Yet, in spite of this, are there not some good things about this man? We dare not overlook the good, even as we cultivate a distaste for the evil. Too often we likely close our eyes to the good qualities in people because we focus so heavily on the evil ones. And with all the evil about this man, there was much good. Now let us take note of it. He was a religious person, as most who hear these words will admit to also be. Had you not rather live among religious people than those who are irreligious, anti-religious, caring nothing whatever for things sacred? Having no standards of morality, living for the devil openly and without shame, blatantly, defiantly, rebelliously, riotously waging war and raging against God? Surely, even though people can be religiously wrong, sometimes fanatically religious to the repulse of everything and everybody, an extreme, such as we see so many times in the religion of Islam. Generally speaking, religious people have many qualities about them that make them better company, better citizens, better neighbors, better friends than those of the other sort. And this man also talked about his religion. And this is not a bad thing. There is nothing wrong in letting other people know you're religious. We are to let our light shine before others to glorify God. Matthew 5 and verse 16. Now, of course, there is a difference between letting your light shine and just shining your light. The latter we ought to avoid, lest we be found hypocrites, and our religion be more of a show for our glory rather than for God's glory. But very likely, if the Pharisee were living among us today, he would be some kind of church member. This is not to say that church members are Pharisees. Some like to ridicule members as all being Pharisees, and this is certainly not so. But this man, like some church members, did make some open and recognizable effort at being religious in worship, and in his manner of life, in his words and his deeds. It is very true that just being religious is not enough to please God. But it is also true that there is no way to please God without being openly religious. Christians are religious. So let us not condemn the religious nature and involvement of this man. And if we knew this Pharisee better, very likely we would find him to be a person who lived a very moral kind of life. Most of them did, even though some did not. He would not rob and cheat and kill and commit adultery. Many evil things he would not do, and this out of conviction to standards he considered supreme. The world in its present evil would certainly be better off if more people would abstain from some of these things. And likely his life would not be characterized as living in such fashion as if this life was all there is to our existence. Eat, drink, and be merry would not be his motto. He believed in the spiritual realm of life. He believed there is life after physical death. Unlike the Sadducee who denied the spiritual realm, he knew the necessity for disciplining himself in this life to be prepared for the next. It's true, many Pharisees were hypocrites. But even a hypocrite realizes some things, if done at all, are so shameful that they ought to be hid from the sight of others. Some do not even have that degree of decency about them, but boastfully parade their degeneracy for all to see. We see this so much among the homosexual community. So when we see this Pharisee with all of his faults, we might wish that there were more people in the world like him. He would be an improvement over what we see among many. But there was something about him that makes him so shameful. He was a very arrogant man, and not open to instruction. His pride contributed to his downfall. As Solomon wrote, "Pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall," Proverbs 16 and verse 18. But his greatest offense was his self-righteousness. Everyone was out of step but him. He looked up to himself, he looked down on others. To any right-thinking person, this is an obnoxious trait. Now, there's a vast difference between being righteous and being self-righteous and inflated over it to the exaltation of self. But take a glance at the publican. The first reaction toward a publican is to frown upon him. There is much about him that, if he was the usual publican, does not deserve admiration. Most publicans were dishonest, though not all. They were considered traitors by their own countrymen since they sold their services to the hated and despised Roman occupation force. They are repeatedly classified along with sinners, almost synonymous with them. They were not above lying and cheating and extorting and taking advantage of others. And since most people considered the publican a doomed person, many of them simply lived up to this expectation. In this publican, we could probably find much that was disgusting. But again, let's not let the bad hide the good. At least he was a humble man. Someone has said, "In order to go up, you first must come down." Or, "Victory belongs to those who surrender to God." This man was very aware of his own sinfulness, and he was not proud of it. He was not so proud as to deny his sins, but he rather confessed his sins before God. And while he knew he was unworthy, he nonetheless asked God to forgive him. Now these two men came to the same place to worship in prayer. Listen to them as they prayed. From their prayers we can learn their motive for being there and the quality of their heart. We shall discover why one was acceptable and why the other was disapproved before God. The Pharisee thanked God he was not like other men. And may I suggest, this is where he made a serious mistake. He was like other men. He was especially glad, he said, he was not like the publican, but he was like the publican. He told God he was not an extortioner, he was not unjust, he was not an adulterer. Now this may well have been true. But he then proceeded to tell God all the bad things that he did not do and all the good things that he did do. Friend, if you listen to the Pharisee, you might think God ought to be very thankful that such a one as he would consent to be on God's side. He was like other men in that he sinned just as they did. Oh, he might not have sinned in exactly the same fashion, but he was guilty of sin nonetheless, and this he conveniently overlooked. The Pharisee did not come to pray seeking God. He was seeking to glorify himself. He was merely paying a duty and satisfying his appetite to be considered religious. He came to get, rather than to give, honor to God. He was so concerned with his righteousness that he was blinded to his need for forgiveness of his sins and his need for God. And possibly this is why we do not derive more benefit from worship services. What is our attitude when we come to worship? For what reason have we come? Do we say within ourselves, Lord, I'm glad I'm not like the Catholic or the denominationalist of Protestantism, or like those who forsake the assembly. I'm glad I'm not like the gambler, the drinker, the lewd, the immoral. Lord, I'm so glad I'm so good. Have we come seeking God's favors and blessings that are offered through worship? Have we come to give glory and praise to Him? Do we seek His forgiveness? Or are we looking for some kind of an emotional and psychological uplift and some excitement and some turn-on to make us feel good? Have we come more to get than to give? Are we present because others expect us to be there, or because we want to be there? Do we simply want to appear righteous and godly? Are we present at worship because we love God and want to exalt His name to the world? There are those who would change the worship services into some kind of religious pep rally so everyone could go home feeling good and impressed with the actors who performed before us. Friend, is this the reason for worship? Maybe we attend with the idea that we're paying our dues to God and therefore He owes us something, His providence and His love in return. Do we come to just soothe our consciences? Why do we attend the worship services? This is at the heart of the matter. Are we self-centered or God-centered? There are three attitudes revealed in the Pharisee's prayer. One was his attitude toward himself. He felt he was better than others, mainly by being present at the prayer hour as well as some other things. His religion was an outward display. He was, indeed, a religious show-off. Surely Christians ought to be better than other people because they are following in the footsteps of Christ. But let us remember that whatever goodness there may be about it, it is because we have partaken of Christ. Cannot we be good and still be humble about it? The Pharisee said he was not like other men, but he was. He was flesh and blood just as others. He was subject to temptation. He was a victim of sin just as others. He missed the point. He sinned just as all do, Romans 3:23. Then there was his attitude toward others. All others were beneath him. They were his worms. They were not on his level. He was critical of everyone else and everything else. Yes, there were things deserving of criticism that we shall see from time to time. But to only see the faults of others and never even investigate the possibility of our own faults is to be a hypocrite, Matthew 7:1-5. Others were simply not worthy of his association because he considered them unclean. He was just so superior, and others so inferior.
And thirdly, let us notice his attitude toward God. Did he really need God? Oh, yes, he did. Did he think he needed God, or was he praying for a just and righteous purpose? Where does he solicit God's mercy upon him? How could a man call upon the sinless God and yet think himself to be so high when he was not so high? A prerequisite to approaching the Lord's throne is that we recognize his superiority and our own unworthiness. Did he think he needed God, or was he convinced God needed him? Now, the publican's prayer was in the opposite direction. There were no compliments for himself, no self-praise, no excuses for his evil, but a humble prayer that solicited God's mercy upon him as a sinner in need of forgiveness. And here we read of a pleading petition, the acknowledgement of dependence on God, a confession of his own lack of worth. He knew that God is the source of strength. He knew that God is the source of all good things. He knew his need of God. He came asking God and to exalt God. Is not this the attitude we're to have when we come to sing and pray and study and give and partake of the Lord's Supper? If we are to receive benefit, is it not to be our purpose and goal to worship in spirit, John 4 and verse 24, with reverence and respect for the Almighty God of heaven and earth? Could this possibly touch upon the reason we come to worship and leave and still feel empty and that the whole period was not well spent? Could it be that we missed the whole thing because of an improper heart? Now, friend, we cannot improve on the items or the avenues of worship that God has revealed. And men ought not try to devise ways and means to express their love for God that are not according to his will. We need to do those things that are by his authority. We are to worship in truth. Worship embodies the concept of submissiveness to the will of God, or it's just a feigned exercise. We can always improve on the human side of worship. Those conducting the services should strive to do the very best that they can each time that they can, to do the very best of which they are capable. But we must individually begin in the heart. Each one studying his or her own motives and purposes, and be sure we are aligned with God's intentions for worship. Now, Jesus said the Pharisee went to his house worse off than when he came. Oh, he thought he was something. But he really did not get anything from his religious exercise because he did not come to give the worship to God as he should have. The publican, on the other hand, went to his house justified, that is, forgiven and approved. If we come to worship as the Pharisee, as if we need nothing, proud, arrogant, self-righteous, seeking self rather than God, wanting to feel good rather than to be good, the result of our worship will be what it was with the Pharisee. But when we come humbly, as did the publican, seeking forgiveness, seeking to give God the glory due him, we shall be exalted before God. Yes, two men went up to pray, but one was rewarded. We will do so much better if we come to worship with the thought, what can I give to God that will honor him, rather than what will I get out of this today? We will get when we give, and when we seek to get and not give, we will lose all. Our heart must be in the right direction. Our attitude must be proper. Then our worship, if done in spirit and in truth, will be acceptable to God. This has been A Burning Fire, and your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.